You're tuned to Berkeley Liberation Radio, 104.1 FM. DJ Captain Fred here with you on a Saturday night. And we have a special guest in the studio, Segway Fishlin from Frankentrikes.
Hey there.
If you would, please tell me about Frankentrikes. What is it? What are you doing?
Hey, yeah. So Frankentrikes is a project to design a vehicle that is optimized for urban transport. So sort of like for anybody, anywhere who lives in a city that's really crowded, there's lots of people, there's lots going on, and there's not a lot of space. So basically what I've done is combine the archetype of the tricycle, which has been around for over 100 years. You see them in Southeast Asia, Northern Europe, Mexico, Central America, all over the place, traditionally used for business in the form of a box tricycle or for carrying people in the form of a pedicab or a rickshaw. So I've taken that archetype of three wheels and combined it with new and rapidly developing technology of powering vehicles with electricity rather than combustion engines. So in doing that, I'm creating a vehicle that is basically an oversized bicycle that goes the same speed as the car in the city. It goes 25 miles an hour. It's 4 feet wide. They're about 8 feet long. And then with the canopy on, they can be as tall as 6 feet, 7 inches tall. So a pretty big vehicle for a bicycle. But it's going the same speed as a car, so you're just kind of moving around in among the cars and the other vehicles without too much trouble. You can pedal, but you can also use the motor assist. This gives you a tremendous advantage over trying to just pedal a large, heavy vehicle, and then you also have the flexibility to carry your friends with you or go shopping, carry large things, go to Home Depot, just go down around the corner to get a bunch of groceries. You name it. There's just all the space available to do anything you like.
Or more bicycle parts.
Or more bicycles. Actually, I've carried bicycles in the front of it too. So the vehicle I'm currently focused on making is, I've done both. I've built both electric assist cargo trikes, which is the box version, and also electric assist rickshaws, which is sort of more designed for carrying people. But at the moment, I'm really primarily focused on the box version because it's just sort of a more generally versatile shape.
Right. Now, a lot of the three-wheeled human-powered vehicles I've seen have one wheel in the front and two in the back. Yours you call a tadpole design with two wheels in the front and one in the back. Now, could you tell me what are the advantages, disadvantages of doing that design?
I don't call it tadpole, and that's actually a, you know, engineering term. I don't know. It's sort of a conventional term for that sort of vehicle. If you have two wheels in front and one in back, regardless of whether it's a recumbent or you name it. And the reason that I do two wheels in the front is when you're going at higher speeds, you know, 25 miles an hour, as opposed to a traditional tricycle, which often was only like maybe 5 or 10 miles an hour, because you're just pedaling. To have two wheels in the front is a much safer, more stable architecture than to have them in the back. It has a lot to do with the ability to stop effectively, because then you can have your braking power where all of the weight and the force is going when you're stopping quickly. It also helps with going, because that also means that your motorized wheels, because the two wheels in the front are the ones that have the motors in them, that also means you've got a lot of power pulling you, which can actually act as a steering stabilizer as you're accelerating. And then having the hydraulic disc brake system in the front also means that you have this kind of equalizing pressure for stopping. So, in fact, because tricycles are stable vehicles, but not as stable as a four-wheel vehicle. You're always thinking about stability first and everything else second. So that's the primary reason, is for going and stopping more safely and effectively and as a steering stabilizer. Secondary reasons include being able to keep an eye on your cargo, because a lot of times when people are traveling by bike, they've got maybe a trailer, so they strap it down, they think it's good, and then they just forget about it. Well, what if you get 5 miles down the road and you realize, oh, some of your load has fallen off? Well, with your cargo in the front, that isn't an issue. You can kind of keep an eye on what's going on and keep an eye on the road. Now, even better, if your cargo is your friend, or if your cargo is your daughter, that means that you can keep an eye on your friend or talk to your friend while you're actually driving down the road. And so it's safer because you're not tempted to turn around to talk to them so they can hear you and then, you know, crash into something because something in front of you has changed. I think those are the two biggest reasons. And then there's a lot of other lesser reasons.
Okay, so safety and control. You have improved safety and control.
And improved social dynamic, I think, is a big part of it. Yeah.
Okay, and how did you get started with Frank and Trikes?
So it's actually a really long story. I'll try and make it brief.
Okay.
It all started, it wasn't planned. It all started with a terrible day that I had back in 1997 when I was driving a car, and then another car that didn't see a yield sign plowed right into my driver's side door at 40 miles an hour.
Oh, my God.
And so that was an interesting day that sent shockwaves for the rest of my life, because there was an ambulance ride involved and a little bit of time in the hospital, and then a long recovery period where, needless to say, I was not driving, and there was a lot of changes that happened in my life at that time. I lost my partner. We had a business together. The business, I sold my half of the business to him. My apartment was demolished, so I was out of work. I guess you could say what happened is that car accident sort of disrupted my regularly scheduled programming, and so losing everything and starting over, somehow bicycles were involved with that. There was a time when I spent out of the city living in nature, and then what came organically out of that process is I ended up bicycling to Mexico. And for that, and again, none of this was really like planned as in, oh, this is what I'm going to do. I ended up towing a 4-foot by 6-foot trailer with a mountain bike, hauling all of my cooking and camping gear all the way from Reno deep into northern Mexico. And that experience I now attribute to the beginning of thinking about moving things by bicycle. But also it was a very physically demanding task. I rode 1,200 miles in 2 months, towing probably somewhere between 100 and 200 and some pounds of food and things. Again, there's lots of details I'm leaving out here. And then that was followed shortly by a return to my home city of Seattle and the planning for my next Burning Man, which had been a yearly ritual when I built a rickshaw, because I thought, well, hey, you know, I just bicycled to Mexico carrying all this stuff. Wouldn't it be nice to carry people instead? So I built a rickshaw, and then that was my role at Burning Man that year. I became a taxi driver. And so then that was really the first tricycle I built, and that was back in 2000. Well, you know, out on the playa where it's really flat, it was easy to pedal around a giant thing with people in it. But then back in my hometown of Seattle, I was like, man, you know, sometimes I take it out for special events or parties or whatever. It was fun. It was very interactive. It had sound. It had lights. It had a crazy canopy. It had tiki lamps. It had all kinds of stuff. It was a wacky party machine. It was really fun, but man, it was hard to pedal. And I had this giant car battery mounted underneath the seat. And I was thinking, man, you know, wouldn't it be great if this battery could actually power the wheels? Because darn, it's exhausting to pedal this thing around Seattle with my friends. I'd love to have fun, but instead I'm just suffering. And it was several years later when, you know, that just kind of stewed in the back of my mind. It was several years later before I met a fellow who actually had just started importing components to convert regular bikes to electric assist bikes or e-bikes. And he knew all about this stuff. And I thought, you know, we should be buddies.
So he could pick his brain, basically.
I picked his brain for a year. In fact, I picked his brain to the point where I moved up to the city he lived in, which was Vancouver. And that's where I built actually the vehicle that I drive today, which was the first electric assist tricycle. And that was a cargo trike, or, you know, box trike style, like Paul said, with two wheels in the front. So both of them had two wheels in the front. So I guess that's where it all began.
Okay. Well, I could see, you know, if you have a car crash, a lot of times it's like after the crash, you don't want to drive. You know, it's like it just brings back all those memories of that trauma and stuff.
Well, and your car is gone.
Yeah, you don't have a car.
You don't have a car. Yeah, so, yeah, it's a combination of the bad memories and simply not having one.
I'm just trying to picture you out in the desert bicycling with this big trailer behind you heading down into Mexico. Did people stop you along the way and ask stupid questions?
Actually, most of the people that stopped along the way asked if I needed a ride because they felt bad for me. I actually turned all of them down except for one in a place where there wasn't enough space for me to pedal and have the cars pass.
No.
But otherwise, I promised myself I was going to do it all on my own power. And so I did. But I met lots of kind people along the way.
Oh, all right. So a positive experience.
Challenging but positive overall. Yeah, I actually met some famous people and had some amazing experiences.
So when I first met you, it was at the Berkeley Spark, which was like a mini Burning Man, or getting people ready for the Burning Man. And you were quite gracious and answering all my questions at the time. And since then, you launched this Kickstarter campaign and then sort of put it on hold temporarily. And I've been getting your emails and following the progress. And I'm wondering if you could just read the message that you sent out to people about your Kickstarter campaign, and then the other one about why you put it on hold.
Yeah, well, that's funny, because actually I went back to the video that you interview made of me at Spark a couple years ago, and I was talking about doing this fundraising campaign, and now I'm actually doing it. I knew it would be hard, but it was harder than expected. It was a lot more hours of work than you would think to prepare to have a fundraising campaign on Kickstarter. So we launched, but then I actually canceled the campaign after a week because I could see it wasn't going to go. You see, with Kickstarter, it's all or nothing, and the amount that we were trying to raise is $50,000. And that's actually quite a lot of money. It's a small amount for this project, but it's a large amount to ask from your world in a short period of 30 to 40 days. So here's what I read as the final update when I canceled. Frank and Trike's fans, the campaign launch didn't go smoothly. A week after the campaign launch, we had just 16 backers. I've canceled the campaign in order to regroup. I am now able to see how the absence of outreach support impacted the campaign. Throughout the preparations, I have had a 50% success rate of working with others. 50% came through as promised, and 50% failed to deliver. Unfortunately, the PR team I hired was of the 50% that failed. It was not clear that they had completely dropped the ball until only 2 weeks before the actual launch. There are further details about this on the campaign page in update number 3. This left a huge void in the realm of outreach, which became painfully apparent on launch day. The outreach plan and outreach actions, which had been entrusted to the team, simply didn't happen. A lot has been accomplished in the past few months, and you can see the results with a stellar video, campaign presentation, new logos, and landing page. Frank and Trikes is a big project, and $50,000 is a lot of money to raise in 30 days. By canceling now, we save time, energy, and money and can regroup and relaunch in a couple of months on the Kickstarter platform or another. Most of the campaign presentation work is done, so now all that energy can be redirected towards outreach. Thanks again for being an active and caring part of an important movement away from fossil fuel dependency. So that was, you know, mainly the issue, is that there was outreach that needed to be prepared, because when you're doing a campaign, you actually have to organize everything ahead of time. You can't just launch and then go, now what do? Call my mom? You have to reach like a lot of people because you have very little time. It's sort of how the whole thing's set up. I guess that urgency is what helps people to focus, both for the people launching the campaign and the people that want to support the project. But it also makes it very stressful and a lot of work in terms of advanced preparation. And I was spending so much time and energy just getting the video together and the rewards together and, you know, writing everything up, that I didn't have time to actually prepare that part. And because my PR people didn't do it, it just kind of didn't get done. So.
Okay, so relaunch it in a couple of months and try again then.
Yeah, and I'm very optimistic about that, because actually, even in the week that we were launched, even with the little bit of outreach that I was able to do, I hired one of these, you know, Kickstarter PR crews that they reach out to you after you've launched and say, hey, we like your project, and if you give us a few $100, we'll help you and all. And, you know, reaching out to these guys, reaching out to friends, family. Even in that week, I learned so much about what was working, what wasn't working. I had a massive amount of return feedback, outreach. There were people that are sort of in my industry that run pedicab companies or are frame builders that wanted to meet me and talk to me and find out how we can work together. The bicycle world is such a cooperative, it's a wonderful ecosystem. There's so many wonderful and generous people in that world, and everyone's trying to help each other. We're working with what we've got, and we're trying to make our cities a better place, to make our world a better place. So even though we were not able to move forward at this moment, a lot of good things have come out of it. I'm getting a lot of good advice now from people who are experienced in outreach and who have done Kickstarters. And so I am very confident that with proper organization and preparation, that this could actually go.
Okay, and on one level, you're sort of reinventing the wheel. But on the other hand, there's lots of people moving in the same direction, away from cars and toward human-powered vehicles, or, you know, battery-assist-powered vehicles. And I think it's going to save our cities, because as it is, with the traffic in the cities, it becomes unsustainable, and it's just downright poisonous, because, you know, just one car, you know, puts out enough smog to kill a whole room full of people. I mean, you multiply that times 1,000, 5,000, 10,000. It's amazing we're not all choking on car exhaust smoke at the moment. I guess because we're on the West Coast and it blows east, you know, people in the Midwest get to breathe it, or it goes down to San Jose, I guess. But it's amazing, you know, just the number of cars that are out there.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, it does affect people here. There's been a documented fairly high rate of respiratory illnesses among children in West Oakland, for example, during the drought when it wasn't raining. I live just east of downtown Oakland, and I was having problems with my eyes burning, my sinuses burning, my ears itching. I was sneezing for hours every day, every morning during rush hour and right after. So I was suffering so much that I put new screens on my window. I was thinking about getting an air filter, which is not really something I've ever seriously considered doing. And I was seriously thinking of moving out of the apartment I was in. It was so bad. And it wasn't until the rains came that I could breathe again and that almost all my symptoms went away. But the pollution that we create you know, from all the freeways and from driving everywhere all the time for every reason and no reason really does have an impact. And I don't even consider myself the most sensitive person out there. There's other people that, you know, practically have to put a mask on just to leave the house.
Yeah. I can remember the Bicycle Liberation Army in Berkeley, and their motto was two wheels good, four wheels bad. And then the other one was, they said, one less car.
Yeah, one less car. So I think that's where a lot of the bicycle people, everyone's got their own idea of what's the best kind of vehicle to get around. You know, there's the pedicab people, there's the cargo bike people, there's the electric bike people. But I think what we share is that desire to bring back a sense of place, a sense of community, to get out of the boxes, to help people to see what they're missing. Because I think that the car can be a very effective way to go a long distance when you have to go really fast. But if you're always in it all the time in your own city, in your own neighborhood, you miss a lot of what's going on around you, and you really feel very separated and decontextualized from your local environment. And I feel that one of the things that the bicycle does is it kind of starts to reconnect you to that sense of place and to realizing, well, this is where you are. This is where I am. You know, what am I going to make of it? How can I make my home and my community better? And I think that when you don't really have to be where you're at, there's sort of a shutting out of what's not pleasant rather than sort of an embracing of what's real and then working with that, which always seems to bring greater benefits than that kind of denial approach.
Okay, well, we're going to take a short break and listen to some music by Janice Whaley, and then we'll be right back. This is Berkeley Liberation Radio. You're tuned to the World Cruise with Captain Fred, and we'll be right back.
Happy in the haze of a drunken hour, but heaven knows I'm miserable now. I was looking for a job and then I found a job, and heaven knows I'm miserable now. In my life, why do I give valuable time to people who don't care if I live or die? Oh,
Music by Janice Whaley there. That's from her solo project, The Smiths Project, doing a cappella multi-track versions of all the songs that Morrissey and the Smiths did. That is a labor of love. And there's so many songs, and I just love it. And so that's what we just heard. Anyway, I'm here with Segway Fishlin, and she is the founder of Frankentrikes. And I wanted to ask you about your first trike.
Okay. So I'm actually, not everyone is going to be able to see this on the radio, but I'm actually holding up an image of my first tricycle. It's actually parked right outside the studio, but you can't really see it on the radio. And it's a red box in the front. If you're in Oakland, sometime you might see me zooming around. And then it's got a two-tiered bimini top on it, which is this white canopy that looks very much like the style that you see on a motorboat. So it's a two-tiered, so it has a lower canopy over the cargo box area and then an upper one that's over, conveniently located over the driver, so the driver can stay dry even in rainy places like Seattle or Vancouver. And sometimes here it actually rains. I think we've talked a lot about that.
Do you have a pet name for that trike?
No, actually, my very first rickshaw, the one I brought to Burning Man, that one, it got named after one of my passengers the first year, and so it was called Romina.
Okay.
But no, actually, my red one has never gotten a name. Maybe someday it will.
Okay. Now, how about your second vehicle that you made?
So the second one I made was a custom order, so it was kind of what the customer wanted. It had a black frame and a kind of brown natural wood panel look to it. And I used high-quality marine-grade plywood for that one. And it was much smaller and more compact because my client said, I want it to be 3 feet wide. And I said, no, it should be 4 feet wide. He's like, no, I want it 3 feet wide. Okay. So I made it 3 feet wide. I think now, ever since he moved out of the place that had the 3 foot wide door and has now moved into a giant warehouse with his business, he probably wishes that he had gotten the 4 foot wide version because they use it every day for their business. They absolutely love it and also for personal use. And some of these photos show him carrying children in his neighborhood around in it because kids love these things. It's like being at Disneyland. So yeah, so that was the first one that I built for someone else.
Okay. How about your next vehicle?
So the next one I made, I got to do more the way I wanted it, but it was another guy with a business, and he was going to be transporting vegetables and fruits from farm directly to market using no fossil fuels whatsoever, using sailboats with no engines, just sail power, which was like, oh my God, that's amazing. And then using my vehicle for sort of the last leg of the journey. So that's a bigger version of the one that I make and had bigger motors. It was a wonderful machine, very powerful. And you can see it here in this picture. That one was blue and teal.
Are there more that you've made?
Yeah, actually. The third one I made custom, I don't have a photo with me, but there's photos on my website, on my archival site, and that was a rickshaw, actually, with much nicer looking than my original hack for Burning Man, beautifully powder-coated in a mint green. And that one is in control of an older couple who just wanted something to tool around their retirement community with, and they love it. And usually the wife sits in the front while the husband sort of drives around, but also both of them will drive it on their errands and such rather than having to walk the long distances. And it's a pretty large retirement community. Some of the distances are up to a mile. And they also had a mind to take it on the golf course, but I'm not sure if they, the golf course, like, allowed it, even though you won't damage the grass with this thing. It's much lighter than golf carts. And so I don't know what happened with that, but that they seem very happy with it. So,
okay. So if somebody comes to you with an idea for some three-wheeled vehicle, you could weld it together for them?
So I still get requests, but what I found building three of them is that it wasn't financially sustainable. The last one I sold for $12,000 and was still losing money. Now, that's because when you do one at a time, it's very time consuming to do that way. If you can make even five at a time or 10 at a time, then you can start charging a reasonable amount and still making enough to continue, and then everybody's happier. So the Kickstarter is all about raising the money to finish research and development, to develop a final production model that we're happy with, that we feel is going to have the longevity that people expect in the frame design, that's going to have the comfort that we can include as far as any little amount of suspension, and that is a tested design and isn't just one at a time here and there, but instead we're taking the best of everything we've learned and turning it into an optimal first model. And so the fundraising is all about finalizing a production model so that we can go into small batch production and then over time scale it from there.
So eventually you're going to have like a somewhat mass-produced unit available?
Yeah, so I loved making the custom vehicles, but it didn't really allow me to explore all of what I wanted to try in terms of ideas to create the best vehicle out there for people. Interestingly enough, this hasn't really been done before because traditionally tricycles only went maybe 5-7 miles an hour because they were just pedal power. But when you're going 25 miles an hour, it's a totally different ball game. And so you need to design and test for high speeds, for all terrain, for hilly situations where they might be going up or down a steep hill. And so it has to have stability in all directions that usually they don't really have to have. It's been a big project. I've had a lot of success. People have been very happy with them, but unfortunately, I cannot build you one right now. If you want to have one, then you would be encouraged to support the campaign when we launch in a couple of months, because that's going to be the easiest and cheapest way for you to get one in your hands in the next few years.
Okay, and if people want to contact Frank and Trikes, what's the best way to do that?
www.frankandtrikes.com. That's F-R-A-N-K-E-N, like Frankenstein, T-R-I-K-E-S, like trikes, or short for tricycle, .com. Right now, on that site, you can see a giant box that has an image in it. It looks kind of like it could be a movie. If you click on that, it actually already goes to the amazing video that Shoots Cuts Flicks made, with my deep participation, but they ultimately kind of put it together because I'm not a film person. And it's just amazing. It's super entertaining. It's very visual. It helps to bring to life sort of what I'm talking about on the radio. And then if you scroll down to the bottom of that page, you'll see in small print, visit our archival site. And there you can see pictures of all these different tricycles I've been talking about tonight and how different they are and the different colors and shapes and sizes. The only one that isn't included is I also built a full suspension prototype that just sits in storage right now.
Got any pictures of that one?
No, it's too ugly to take pictures of. I hacked it together in like a week and a half for Burning Man 1 year, but I learned a lot from it.
Okay. Well, one of the things we were talking about is how centralized the whole fossil fuels, oil companies, and how, well, basically they've roped us into this automotive thing where people have to have cars. And there are just so many places in America where you can't walk to the store. You have to get in your car and drive to the store because it's miles away or whatever.
Yeah, actually our cities have developed that way because of the car. I just finished reading Beth Bagwell's History of Oakland. And what most people even here in Oakland don't realize or don't know is that Oakland had arguably the best rail system service of any city in America in the 1920s.
You're talking about the key route.
Anywhere. Well, there was multiple competing different, at one point, there were six different rail companies operating six different rail lines just on Broadway. So back then, it was a bit of the Wild West. It wasn't super regulated. The government wasn't running these rail systems. So a company would go, an entrepreneur would say, I want to run a rail from this place to this place, and they would just do it. They would just put the rails in. The local government, I guess, wasn't organized enough to, you know, stop them, or they supported it because it supported the development of the city. And you could get anywhere. And there was so many ferries running every few minutes across the bay from a 3-mile-long spit that extended out almost all the way to Yerba Buena Island. So you could get from Berkeley to San Francisco as fast in the 1920s as you can now with BART. And so we've really lost a lot when the car came in. We've lost a lot of our mobility and our options because now before we had many options, horses and carriages, there were cars already by the 30s. There was the train system, walking, bicycling, and now, you know, our options have been massively reduced. We don't think a lot about where our power comes from, but when you think about it, you know enough to know that when you go to the gas station and you fill up your car with gas, that there's no way that you're going to make gas yourself. Now, I know there's some of you out there that make biodiesel and they have diesel vehicles, and more power to you. That's awesome. And there's a handful of people that have that know-how, and I think it's a great movement, and I fully support it. However, for most people, most days, it's not easy to produce enough fuel to power a large vehicle. Now, when you think about electricity and human power, and that with fossil fuels, like, you're not going to run around and like dig deep holes and pump out your own oil. But what if you just needed to produce enough food to power your body, to pedal yourself around town? Or what if you could go to the local farmer's market and get some food and power yourself around town? I mean, human power is essentially a decentralized power source, meaning you can get that power from anywhere. Fossil fuels is essentially centralized because you mostly are just going to get it from a few companies that have the resources to dig deep underground. And then electricity is also decentralized because you can get it from the grid and from however, you know, PG&E is producing it, or you can get a solar panel, or you can get it from wind energy, or, you know, there's dozens of potential ways. I mean, All Power Labs in Berkeley is doing it with bio waste. They're making electricity. So electric power really opens up the whole world of power to anyone, rather than it being a essentially centralized source of power, and therefore the power to move us being in the hands of just a few companies. Instead, you've now changed the playing field, and now anybody can jump in and generate that power.
We were talking about wave power too, and I think that's going to get really big in the future because we all live fairly close to the coast, and the power of just one wave is incredible. And you multiply that times, you know, the entire ocean, and it's practically unlimited amount of power that we're not even tapping into at all.
Yeah, and that also can be easily converted to electric power to power our vehicles, to power our appliances. So yes, absolutely.
Yes, and our internet connection device is very important this day. To just watch everybody around town with their cell phones. It's just, they're in this virtual world on their cell phone. They're not even looking where they're walking. And it's like, you should turn that thing off every now and then, you know? I know people who's just, they never turn it off. It's just on 24/7, and it's right next to them while they're sleeping.
Yeah, and I wonder how much of that sort of mentality of kind of tuning out the world and, you know, comes from actually a couple of generations just spending so much time in cars. Because in a way, what you do in a car is you sort of tune out everything around you and you just focus on where you're going, what you're doing. And then it seems to have an impact on sort of how we even interact with our communities, our environments now.
Yeah, your friends are all Facebook friends, right?
You hope they're still your friends.
Sort of a cyber friend. Anyway, okay, so any closing comments you want to make about Frankentrikes and where the future of Frankentrikes here?
Yeah, just to say that you may or may not believe this, but I have not found anyone else actually doing this in the world. And when I say that, I mean optimizing the tricycle architecture for high speeds, for all terrain. Everybody else seems to be adding a kit to like an old-fashioned design that doesn't get it very far or very fast. So if you would like to see this option available, definitely consider supporting my campaign and spreading news far and wide. It's already up on Kickstarter now, even though it's not active. It'll be relaunched in a couple of months. And this is a rare opportunity to give people an option in cities that isn't a car. It's not a bike. It's something in between that allows you to go on the sidewalks, in the bike lanes, and on the street, to go anywhere at any time, and to have that freedom of a bicycle, but also all the flexibility that comes with having a car. So yeah, just keep it in mind for the near future.
All right. Well, Segway, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much for having me, Paul.
Okay. On the day that your mentality decides to try to catch up with your biology, come round, 'cause I want the one I can't have, and it's driving me mad. It's all over, all over, all over my face. On the day that your mentality catches up with your biology, I want the one I can't have, and it's driving me mad. It's all over, all over, all over my face. A double bed and a stall of love for sure. These are the riches of the poor. A double bed and a stalwart lover for sure. These are the riches of the poor. And I want the one I can't have, and it's driving me mad. It's all over, all over, all over my face. A tough kid who sometimes swallows it, raised on prisoner's aid. He killed a policeman when he was 13, and somehow that really impressed me. It's written all over my face. Oh, these are the riches of the poor. And I want the one I can't have, and it's driving me mad. It's written all over my face. On the day that your mentality catches up with your biology, self-validation, then meet me in the alley by the railway station. It's all over.